Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ray, and welcome to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now, here are your hosts, Mick and Jake.
Today, we're talking about WatchKit with developer, author, and hackathon organizer Ben Morrow. Hey, Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, before we jump into WatchKit, can you tell us a little more about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. So a few years ago, I was living in Texas, and I had a startup company called Liquid, and we made personal finance apps for both iOS and Android, and had a couple of apps. The first one was eponymous, it was called Liquid, and the other one was MyCost. And then moved to the Silicon Valley area about a year ago, and since then I've been working with natural language processing. And then once we started, knew for sure that the Apple Watch was going to come out, then I kind of jumped full time into that.
Okay, now I believe by the time this goes out, you're going to have put together the world's first hackathon. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started a meetup group about 6 months ago, and in that we were, you know, trying to learn all the tools that we could, like Swift and Facebook's Origami tool for animations, And so this hackathon is kind of the first chance for us to actually put all that work into practice now that the WatchKit SDK has come out. And so we should have about 150 hackers in person, and we're going to have about 200 that are remote. So they'll be joining us over YouTube streaming, and then they can actually present with Google Hangouts. And so it'll be cool to see what people can build with this first version of WatchKit, and we'll make sure that we include the hacks that are presented in the show notes for the show.
Okay, fantastic. Now, as I'm sure everyone's aware, Apple finally released the WatchKit SDK on Tuesday, and I think it's fair to say that it was met with mixed emotions from the developer community. I guess on one hand, we kind of got more than we were expecting, but on the other, it appears that the SDK is riddled with limitations, caveats, and idiosyncrasies. Now, personally, I've spent a ton of time working with WatchKit since it was released, including to putting together an app that was used in the Getting Started with WatchKit tutorial that went live on Wednesday, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And sort of personally, I've been really quite impressed with the SDK despite its limitations, but I'm curious to hear how you two chaps have found it.
I'm mostly a game and photo app developer. I do a lot of video and photo, like OpenGL-based image processing, and then I do games. So for me, what we have in WatchKit right now is, I wouldn't call it disappointment because I'm not surprised, but I am eagerly awaiting more access to more hardware, more like lower level stuff.
Yeah, I mean, same here. You know, one of the things that I, you know, really miss is the fact that we can't use the motion data or the heart rate sensor or the digital crown. So the fact that we can't kind of tie into the hardware is disappointing. But at the same time, it is really neat that we can build an app. And since the code lives on the iPhone, then we can do things like talk to an API, you know, live and get data and bring it down and use the location data and things like that.
Yeah, so I mean, the app that I put together for the tutorial was actually a Bitcoin tracker. So we included some of that stuff using the phone to go off to the network and request a JSON, you know, against the API and then return those results and push it back to the watch. And that all worked really nice. But I guess not having access to the sensors on the phone itself, given how many there is a big limitation. But I'm just wondering if we could use the stuff that's in the phone and just present that to the watch, because I guess the two should be very similar.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. If you got your phone with you all the time, I mean, I don't see a reason why you couldn't, for example, you know, tie into HealthKit on the phone end and get the steps and things like that from there.
Yeah, so I guess in terms of the health, then we can use stuff from the phone that makes sense, such as step counting and that kind of stuff. But the new stuff, all the stuff that's built into the watch, yeah, is a shame that that isn't exposed. But, you know, I think one of the things that we should bear in mind is this is obviously still in beta. So we can hope things are going to change before the official release. And then also there's the promise in Apple's press release when they put this out on Tuesday that native apps are coming or fully native apps are coming next year. So I assume that whatever we don't get in this SDK will come next year, and I assume by next year they mean WWDC.
Yeah, that's the good thought process. And what do you guys, do you have any opinions on what full apps mean? Do you think that will be like just an app on the watch, or will it still be tied together with a phone?
I've got a feeling that it's going to be standalone. I think there's too many issues and caveats around requiring your phone. And because there's all sorts of situations and edge cases where your phone and your watch could be paired, and then all of a sudden, like, your phone goes missing if your battery runs out, or you know, it reboots, or you're starting installing a system update, or you know, any of these kind of things. You might be in the middle of doing something with your watch, and you know what happens. And there's loads of like, if you go on the forums, there's loads of questions like this that are yet to be answered. Or a common answer is like, if you see that as an issue, file a radar, which is a bit concerning. So I think like the next logical step would be to remove the dependency on the iPhone, and maybe make it optional. So if you want to pair with the iPhone and pull data from the iPhone, then you can in the way that we can do that now. But I do think installing directly from some sort of app store or another category in the app store directly to your watch. That's how I would say it. I don't know if you've got any different thoughts on that, Jake.
Well, I think it depends on why the current capabilities are so limited. So, I mean, one reason is that it's brand new, right? And it's just not fully built out yet. And that's why we're so limited in what we can do right now. But the other theory on that is that the hardware on the watch is so limited that Apple has had to build a system that relies heavily on the phone, because the phone can do way more. And if it's that second thing, then I don't know that we'll get a whole lot more. You know, Apple's going to make sure that when people buy the watch and start installing third-party apps, that there's still decent battery life and that the experience is decent. And so if the hardware is just that limited, and the fact that they have built this system where, as it is now, it's just essentially loading storyboards, and it's just kind of this, I mean, it's been described as like a client-server model, and it's just acting as a client. The fact that they have a system that they've built where it acts like a client makes me wonder, you know, why go to the trouble of building that scenario out if that's not based on a limitation in the hardware. So I certainly hope we get a whole lot more, but I think that it's possible that there's a reason that we won't, and that being that just the at least not for this first gen device.
Well, I've seen a lot of chatter on Twitter about how UIKit is in the phone. The phone is running a cut down version of iOS. I don't know if you've seen any of this. There's a framework in there called Peppercore, which is like the Apple's UI kit, if you like, for the phone, not the one that we've been handed. So clearly the phone is, the watch is capable of, you know, running something more akin to what we would be used to with iOS apps. But obviously as well, you know, a big step forward from what they've handed us. So, I mean, I just see this as the equivalent of web apps on the first iPhone. I mean, that's the way I'm looking at it, that they want to probably get the hardware right and get all the system stuff up and running, and then, you know, bring a full SDK probably with the either WWDC or the release of the second generation Apple Watch. Well, maybe we should talk about some of the limitations though while you bring that up. I mean, one of the big ones is we've been given this set of interface objects that sort of all descend directly from an S object, and they make it quite clear in the programming guide and the framework references that you're not to subclass. You know, you can't do your own controls, you can't manipulate the way things work. And I think upon reading on it, it's because these objects all act as a proxy. So it's not actually what's being drawn by the phone, it's just a proxy object that we hand to the phone and the watch, and then they take it off us and do whatever and set up the Bluetooth communication between the phone and the watch. So it is like it's very, very restrictive, the UI framework, with what you can and can't do.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, we have a departure now, but we're not using auto layout you know, we have this new paradigm called groups.
Which I'm excited about because I'm not a huge fan of auto layout.
Well, anybody with any Android experience, I think, will feel comfortable with the relative and sort of the horizontal and the vertical relative layout, because it's very similar to the model it's used on Android. And it does, when you start playing around with it in Interface Builder, it's a little quirky, because sometimes what's in Interface Builder and the way that renders it doesn't quite match up with what's on the simulator. And I don't know whether that's a simulator issue or a Interface Builder issue. But it's something that you can get used to a little quicker than auto layout. It's like it's miles apart in terms of complexity. So, you know, somebody coming straight in, I think, could pick this up much sooner than they could auto layout. It's just a shame that for the last sort of 2 years, Apple has really pushed auto layout onto iOS developers. So everybody's been spending all this time learning auto layout, and then they throw this completely new model on us. But you know, I spent a couple of hours with it just trying to understand the layout on Tuesday and Wednesday, and you know, like I say, it didn't take that long to get used to. Obviously it's very limiting the way things work, but you can build some quite complex layouts by putting groups inside groups inside groups, and having some set as horizontal and some set as vertical. You can get quite deep.
Another thing that, you know, I was kind of surprised at, as far as kind of the layout and stuff goes, is that Apple this time around is providing Photoshop PSD files, you know, I guess to kind of help designers transition to this new way of thinking.
Yeah, I think the assets that come from Apple, I think that's pushing people more towards the fact that it's going to rely a lot more on the graphics. Like if you want to put together a really nice looking UI and move away from the stock appearance, because every object that you can put on screen on the watch can have either a colour or a background image. So I think when we start seeing some apps, you're going to get a lot that look and feel the same, because people are just stuck to the stock UI components that Apple have provided. But I think you'll get some people that take the design to the next step by using images. But it's just a shame that, I mean, that almost feels like a step backwards. And you know, we're having to, you know, make lots of images and slice them and stretch them. And you know, this is the kind of stuff we were doing 3 or 4 years ago. And obviously, that's the same with animations now as well. There's no core animation on the watch. If you want to animate something, you've got to do a series of images. So again, I mean, that feels like a step back. So it's very asset reliant, and I think that's why they're giving away these sort of Photoshop documents and all this, the guides and stuff that they have, to try and get people to realize that you can probably make something stand out and feel different to what everybody else is putting, but it's going to be a lot more work.
I think that's worth highlighting, Mick, the fact that there's no animation available to us. It's all about a series of static images which are shipped. Correct me if I'm wrong about this, but basically the idea is to front load all your assets, your visual assets, so that when the app is installed on the watch from the phone, almost everything visually comes in that first install, and it's part of the original bundle. And there it's possible to send an image, but we don't even know for sure how slow it's going to be, because we don't actually have devices right now. It's moving between, you know, one simulator and another, but once we get actual devices, it's probably not going to be fast enough for us to be sending even dynamically generated images on the phone to the watch. And so anything that we want to do visually, we're going to have to preload into the bundle from the get-go.
Yeah, I think that is a good thing to point out. They do provide a 20 meg image cache on the phone, which you would then think is to be used by either sending images from the phone down to the watch.
You know, since we can't have core animation, that means that right now we also can't make any custom watch faces yet, which is interesting, because I thought that Apple was going to kind of enable that right at the beginning.
Could you not make a custom watch face just using like many, many, many static images?
Well, if you Well, I mean, if you have like a analog watch, you know, that would be a lot because all the hands, you'd have to get an image for every hand position possible.
Well, I think this is kind of the thing that they are pushing us towards, though. Like, I would hate to not have, like, for want of a better word, good stuff on the watch because of these immediate sort of limitations and caveats. And it might be that it just needs some third-party tooling to help with this. And I'm sure people are already thinking about stuff that they can build to try and help with watch app development. But just while we're talking about like having to load the bundle that's installed up, it's kind of the same thing with the storyboard. One of the sort of limitations is that you have to have any object that you want to display at any time during the lifetime of your watch app has to be on the view in the storyboard and then either hidden or the alpha set to zero. So you can't like dynamically add and remove subviews as you would in iOS, which again means it's another way of thinking because then it affects the layout. So when you've got this this grouping that lays itself out based on what's on screen and you take if you set an object as hidden, then it takes it out. So it then realigns that group. But if you just set to alpha, then the layout it remains because the object is still on screen. It's just not visible. So that's another limitation that you're going to have to kind of work around if you want to. You kind of have to think about everything that you may want to present up front and have it all in that view in the storyboard and then just hide it and unhide it at the relevant times.
Yeah, it's kind of like a kind of a stacked single view application.
Could you construct your own run loop and animate the alpha up and down, or is it just all on or off? Do you know? Probably nobody's tried that yet.
It's just on and off.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
There's no hooks into anything like that because obviously any code that you run is actually run on the phone.
Right.
So if you were to, I suppose you could do it from the phone.
Yeah, that's
but,
what I mean.
Yeah, but it's whether or not, like, because obviously we don't understand as well what the lag's like, because that's my biggest concern. Because everything that we're doing at the minute is running
so
in
maybe,
the simulator.
Maybe you could do it, but maybe you wouldn't want to.
Yeah. Well, you see, there's even stuff like that in the programming guide. It's kind of there's a lot of recommendations in there. You can do this, but we don't recommend you do.
Okay.
And it's kind of all right. Well, we'll stay away from that. And some people have put this down to it being, because they've had to include both Objective-C and Swift, apparently if it was just Swift, they could get away with just not allowing people to do this, but Objective-C isn't as strict or can't be as restrictive because of the way that it works as Swift is. So stuff that you could get away with doing in Swift to restrict what the developer can do, such as subclassing, they can't do that in Objective-C because of the nature of the language. So they have to put all these recommendations and do's and don'ts in the programming guide.
So, one thing I wanted to do was kind of, you know, we've talked a lot about the limitations, but kind of talk about what are the possibilities. And, you know, one way to think about that, I think, is to talk through the apps that Apple announced when they told us about the watch itself. So they announced these partner companies that were with them, and if you guys don't mind, I'll kind of just go through and say all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So American Airlines lets you handle the entire process of checking in at the airport and then boarding the plane with their app. Starwood Hotels lets you check in at the front desk on your watch, and then they also let you open your room door with your watch. The City Mapper app gives you mass transit directions and then reminds you to get off at the right train stop by tapping you on the wrist. The Pinterest app alerts you when you're near sites of interest. So when you are near a photo that you have liked and it knows the location of it, then it will tell you the walking directions to that. So the example is like the Painted Ladies houses in San Francisco. If you're kind of in that area, then it'll give you walking directions to them. BMW lets you see the charge level of your car and it will give you directions to where you parked your car. Major League Baseball lets you see the current sports scores. Honeywell lets you control the temperature in your home. the Lutron app lets you control the lighting scene in your home. So like you could make it kind of warm or cool throughout your home. And the Nike app lets you challenge your friend to go for a run and kind of shows you the progress between that.
So do you think, I mean, that's quite a substantial list with some cracking ideas, especially on like, I like the unlocking of the door and checking in and boarding your plane. But do you think that they are all written with the SDK that we've been given or the SDK that we will get next year?
I mean, I think it's, you know, especially for the door unlocking, no, because that's using the NFC technology. So we obviously don't have access to that. But then the other stuff, you know, it kind of seems like it's just using a lot of API-based communication, which makes sense. I mean, one of the cool things that I saw on the Apple dev forums was, I don't know if it's American Airlines, but some airline said you can ask, where am I while you're flying on a plane? And then it will tell you like 30,000 feet. And the way that it's doing that is it's using the dictation feature to fill in a text box on the watch. And that text box is being sent over an API to a server. And the server, you know, knows your plane flight number, and it looks it up, and then it can tell you, you know, how high you are on the plane.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it does all, a lot of that stuff does sound really cool. And I think you're probably right. I think it is going to have to be. Everybody's just going to need to get around sort of the way that they think now when it comes to iOS and having to think differently for working with the watch. So as an example, when you start the app on the watch, it wakes up the extension on the phone so the two can communicate. But I'm pretty sure it doesn't work the other way around. So for instance, when you were talking about the Pinterest and it alerts you when you are near points of interest, you know, if that is with the current SDK, then that's probably using the existing Pinterest app for call location and then some sort of notification sent to the phone, which then wakes the phone app up, the watch app up, sorry, and then that would then launch the extension on the phone so that the two could communicate. So it's like you're going to have to go like that full round trip and still rely on parts of your phone app to provide a lot of the functionality. And this is the existing phone app, not just the extension that's added into that bundle to run on the phone when the watch app is running.
Right, because they said that the WatchKit extension that's on the phone, it can get killed, you know, at any time. So especially if you want to kind of monitor something over a long period of time, then it's got to be like the real iOS app that's, you know, using the location in the background stuff.
You know, every one of those things you mentioned, every one of those examples of use cases is something that is kind of exciting. And I'm like, oh, I want that. One question I have is that when we moved from not having mobile phones to having mobile phones, we went from not having internet everywhere we were to having it, right? Like anywhere we were, we could get access to all kinds of different pieces of information. In the case of the watch, we're just moving that access to a kind of a more convenient location, right? So like for me, like one of the things I wonder is like, what are there things that just were impractical or not worth doing before that become worth doing? Like kind of, do you guys think, is there anything that you're thinking of doing that's like different? Because most of those things is like, we could do this with our phone, but it's just nicer and easier to do on our wrist, right? I mean, is that the essence of what it is? Or are there things that potentially you just wouldn't do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right in a way that, you know, you could do a lot of things through the phone, but maybe you can. I mean, a couple of the ideas that I'm excited about that we won't be able to do right away, it sounds like, but are definitely in the running down the line, is like a workout app that will count your reps as you work out. And so it knows when it's time for you to move to the next exercise. And then it, you know, tells you, you know, you know, start doing jumping jacks, you know, start doing push-ups. And, you know, you could do that, something like that, with the phone, because, you know, we have access to the accelerometer and the gyro. But it's kind of impractical to kind of keep your phone and use it for that purpose. But the watch, you could do it. And then same thing, like with, you know, communicating by drawing, you know, you know, Draw Something got popular as an app for a little while, but people don't really do that on the phone, but I think they will on the watch. You know, I think people will draw pictures to each other to kind of communicate.
I've been playing with the Microsoft Band, and it's interesting to have, you know, your heart rate monitored all the time. There's health implications, and what Microsoft Band does is what you kind of would expect. It tracks it all the time, plus it'll track it when you're, you know, running or whatever, and you can, as you work out, you can kind of determine how intensely you're working out by your heart rate. But there's other things that could be enabled by using heart rate that are different, that aren't the obvious things, right? Like, you know, different states of like, am I stressed? Am I this? Am I that? You can measure kind of how people biologically respond to different circumstances through heart rate and other biological sensors. And so there's things like that where I think, obviously, again, this first iteration of the watch is not going to give us access to these hardware sensors. But when we do get that, I do think there's things that we just aren't really thinking of yet, because it's just never been even remotely feasible to do it, that will kind of pop up as we kind of play more with these devices. So,
yeah, one thing I heard that I thought was interesting was kind of using your heart rate while you're playing a game to know kind of how scary the situation is. And then, you know, if it's a game that wants to be scary, then they could kind of do A/B testing and figure out like what's the scariest way we could do this.
Yeah, stuff like that would just be so fascinating to have this kind of constant monitoring of this information that we don't have yet, you know, so.
EA, you know, the big sports game company, has some cool ideas too. They say that you could use app extensions to access features like the team driver feature in Real Racing 3, so that you could make kind of passive progress over time. And then, like, when you come back to your phone or your iPad, then you've made progress because you've been doing things throughout the day on your watch. And then they also are interested in kind of using the fitness component of the watch to unlock capabilities within kind of a normal game.
Yeah, I mean, what if there was some way to kind of infer level of emotional arousal? And so when you send a text to somebody or whatever, you could see how they, if their body responded to what you just sent them, you know, whether you made them angry or whether you got them excited or whatever.
I should do that on in-app purchase and push notifications. Unsolicited push notification, I should say. I suppose as well, one thing that we should cover before we wrap things up is, as I mentioned in the intro, we did get more than we were expecting. I think a lot of people from the early announcements from Apple expected us just to get glances and interactive notifications, and obviously we got apps as well. So I'm wondering, Ben, if you could just walk us through the differences between an app, a glance, and an interactive notification.
Absolutely. So a glance is kind of a single page view that you get by swiping up from the bottom of the watch screen. And then they act like pages, so you can swipe left and right and go through your different glances. And so you could have things like stocks and weather, and then things like your next meeting coming up. And then you could think of it like a dashboard for your app. So whatever, you know, information that someone might just want to check on, you could have as a glance. An actionable notification is something that is like a push notification. It gets sent to the watch, and then you can provide your own buttons. So like if there was a friend request from Facebook, you know, they could have a button for add friend, you know, or not now. So not just okay and cancel, but you can have your own custom buttons in there. And then an app is something that we've been kind of talking about, but you have your code and your data model on the phone, and then the view itself lives on the watch. But you can have kind of a multi-page app. You know, you can kind of drill down like a master view controller for the phone. And so, you know, people could build something reasonably complex. I mean, you know, what is the Mail app? But it's just kind of a master view controller with like a list of things, and you drill down into individual messages and things like that.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to wrap things up. Ben, thanks again for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And guys, that's it for another episode. As always, if you have any questions or feedback, then please don't hesitate to get in touch via podcast@raywenderlich.com. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, then please do leave a review on iTunes. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the RayWendelick.com podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and don't forget to leave a rating on iTunes. See you next time.